Museum in Avignon, France. Night watchmen surprised the robbers in the act, but were overpowered. French police say the thieves apparently hid in the palace until it was closed yesterday afternoon, and then cut the telephone wires. Officials say it's impossible to estimate how much the Picasso paintings and drawings are worth because they were done in the artist's final years, and the market for his works during that period is not known. But officials say Picasso did not sign the stolen works, and that makes them less valuable than if they were signed. More news coming up.
Okay, I made a mistake. My first mistake. But they say guys like me coming out of jail usually wind up coming right back.
I like sitting in the park, but not every day. I want to do something useful. People around here, though, they think you're over 65. You're useless.
The man crossed and shoot. Who are you kidding, girl? You're nowhere unless you can read.
Tough problems call for real solutions, not just talk. If your community has a problem, you need action. Action is skilled volunteers of all ages working together to help solve tough community problems. Write Action, Department Q, Washington, D.C., 20525. Between us, there's got to be a solution.
This is a public service of this station and the Advertising Council.
Phoenix police are looking for a man in connection with Saturday night's stabbing death of Ernesto Miranda. He was the man for whom the landmark Miranda decision by the Supreme Court was named. The decision requires police to inform suspects of their constitutional rights. Police say Miranda was stabbed by one of two men he had beaten up in a barroom fight. One of those men is being questioned. The killer, police say, is at large. Israel's Prime Minister Rabin says he's satisfied that Congress will vote the military and economic aid that Israel needs. Rabin's comment tonight before a gathering of Jewish organizations in New York comes after the Ford administration has indicated that it would request $500 million less in aid for Israel this coming fiscal year. Sam Chulin has more on Rabin's speech.
Prime Minister Rabin says his talks with President Ford prove there is no American erosion of sympathy for Israel. He says there is political accord as to what should be done to achieve peace in the Middle East. That includes military aid for Israel.
I believe that there is an understanding on the part of the administration and the Congress to the need to get the kind of financial aid to Israel to allow us to purchase these arms and to carry the burden, the heavy burden, of defense because of the influx of Russian arms to our neighboring countries.
Rabin blames the Arab world for the destruction of Lebanon, calling it the real tragedy of the Middle East. He says the Christian world was blind as 10,000 people were killed. Rabin says the silence of the Christian world makes him proud to be a Jew. Sam Chulin, CBS News, New York.
And now, this message.
Hello there, this is Jim Backus. You know, I asked my friend, Mr. Magoo, have you ever heard of the disease of prosperity? You probably have, only you've heard of it as heart attack. It's called the disease of prosperity because the risk factors that increase the chances of heart attack are usually the result of prosperous living condition. Childhood habits. Some children get in the habit of watching TV instead of exercising. Smoking often begins in the teens or sometimes even earlier. And by the time they reach middle age, many of them are overweight, inactive, and have high levels of cholesterol and other fatty substances in the blood. High blood pressure is also common at that age. Any one of these conditions or risk factors increases the chance of heart attack. A combination of two or more multiplies that risk. One way you can protect your heart is to see your doctor. Another way is to support your Heart Association's efforts to find more of the answers to heart attack. So give to the Heart Fund now. And thank you very much.
A House subcommittee report says there were about 2.5 million unnecessary surgeries on patients in 1974, and that led to about 12,000 deaths that year. The committee says most of the unnecessary surgery included tonsillectomies, hysterectomies, and appendectomies. Dr. Max Parrott, who's president of the American Medical Association, tells CBS News that the AMA has not taken a position on the House report simply because they cannot define the word unnecessary. Dr. Parrott zeroed in on the hysterectomy statistics.
The figures that they give on hysterectomies is whether they're necessary or unnecessary, and the number of deaths connected with it are totally unrealistic. They haven't done it scientifically. It's a hyped-up type of statistical reporting.
And Dr. Parrott says the people making the accusations, most of whom are House committee staffers, don't know one thing about the practice of medicine. This is Ann Crosman, CBS News.
Radio Mystery Theater presents Come In. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. I don't know about you, but to me, the tinkling sound of a music box has always charmed and soothed me, conjuring up pleasant memories and the balm of sweet nostalgia. It still does, in spite of this story. But if it sends a chill through you, don't, please, blame it on music boxes in general. Just on this one and its haunting tune that struck a chord from the past that stirred up something infinitely more gruesome and deadly than nostalgia.
Oh, Susanna, we're so lucky. This wonderful house. The future is a dream almost come true already. Do you like your birthday present?
I love this music box. I love you, Hank. Everything you do for me. Until I found the past coming up to haunt me.
What do you mean?
I don't know. It's just the music box. As soon as it started to play, my eyes were drawn away down to the end of the garden path. To the summer house. To the girl in the crinoline dress who's dancing there.
What girl? I can't see anyone.
I was afraid you might say that. Somehow I know she isn't really there. Has to be a ghost. But why would she want to haunt me?
Our mystery drama, The Special Undertaking, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin and stars Jada Rowland and Don Scardino. It is sponsored in part by Time Magazine and Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
For a lot of people, a full-size car is a downright necessity. Buick understands that, which is why they build Le Sabre, a car with lots of standard comfort and convenience, a big trunk, and honest-to-goodness elbow room for six. Buick Le Sabre, free spirit in the family size.
Imagine living without electricity, or indoor plumbing, or food when you're hungry, or clothing when you're cold, or a job when you need money, or a school to get an education. Millions of children around the world don't have to imagine. They live that way. But there is hope, and you're it. By contributing to Save the Children Federation, you can help erase a lifetime of misery. All it takes is a few dollars. Won't you please send your check to Save the Children, Box 970, Grand Central Station, New York, 10017.
Dreams. We all seek to understand the many ways in which God reveals His Word. The prophet Joel spoke in the name of God. It shall come to pass in the last days, I will pour out my Spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and daughters shall prophesy, and your young men shall see visions, and your old men shall dream dreams. So pay attention to your visions and dreams. They may contain more than you imagine. For your free booklet on dreams, write to the Foundation Church, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021. That's the Foundation Church, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021.
Reminded of this story a week or so ago when I picked up the morning paper and read that a small town was advertising for a doctor and willing to finance him and as many partners as he could attract in setting up a clinic. In outlying areas, medical men, general practitioners, are always in demand today. How much more so in the last century? Which is how the newly married Dr. Henry Fleming and his bride, Susanna, came to Huntington House some 100 years ago via the new Union Pacific Railroad, which had finally linked the East with the West.
Do I have the honor of addressing Mrs. Fleming?
Yes, sir.
I'm Buford Hughes. Allow me to assist you. Ezra, get the lady's carpet bag.
Yes, sir. I'll relieve you of that bag, ma'am.
Why, thank you.
That's Mr. Ezra Whitfield, Beaver City's most prominent lawyer, in more ways than one. They say success goes to a man's head. In Ezra's case, it went to his waistline. There we are, ma'am. And you'd be our new doctor, sir.
Brand spanking new, sir. Just graduated out of medical school.
Ah, but from Harvard.
Hank, what about our baggage?
No, don't you worry, Mrs. Fleming.
Well, I'd like to check and make sure our trunks are there.
Ah, ma'am, I think it's more appropriate for Ezra to help you in that area. Well, I make your husband as welcome as I can.
Why, sure, Mrs. Fleming. I can see your trunks are all off. Just go check them over.
Okay, honey?
This is my job.
A fine young woman, sir. Eminently equipped to be a doctor's wife.
Or anyone's. Susanna is one of a kind.
Mm-hmm. I support your opinion. Just as soon as the missus has checked out your belongings, I have a wagon waiting to take them to your house. I also have a rig so that we can stop by the bank and sign our agreements.
I think Susanna is a bit worn out. Could we perhaps get settled first and then the papers?
My dear boy, I'm sorry. I should say doctor, forgive me.
It's all right. I'm young, but I have knowledge. Don't worry.
Oh, I have no worries about your abilities after our long correspondence. And I don't want to lose you. You are needed here. We'll all just try to put out and make you feel at home. Right here. Well, now, sir, there she is, Huntington House.
Oh, Hank, right on the ridge. It's beautiful, isn't it?
Oh, it surely is.
The house certainly is big enough.
Well, we're only going to be using a corner of it. The rest is for a clinic, as we planned.
I hope we can get some other doctors to fill it up.
You leave that to me, ma'am. Beaver City's made me a very rich man. I want to plow some of my good luck back into it. And that's why I advertised in the East to get a doctor out here.
I'll try not to make you sorry for your generosity in any way.
Whoop, easy now. Right before your front door.
Oh, Hank, I'm scared. It looks so big.
Sure, honey. That's the point. It's the beginning of a hospital that someday the whole West is going to talk about. The whole country. What are you mumbling about, darling?
Oh, nothing, Hank. I'll tell you later. Let's go have a look at our new home.
I calculate with you tired and all after your journey, I should have taken you straight into the house. But with the light going, I wanted to see a little of the grounds.
It's amazing. I can't believe the house has been empty all that time.
After 15 years, I expected a jungle.
No, there's been a housekeeper here all these years. Mrs. Bunter. And for years, her son kept the outside of the place.
Oh, Hank. Look at that little summer house down at the end of the path. Isn't it lovely?
Oh, it sure is, Susanna.
I want to go there right now.
It's almost sundown. I'd let it wait if I were you, Mrs. Fleming.
Why?
Why, because it ain't going to go away. And I can smell that Mrs. Bunter has supper about ready. I'm sure you must be hungry after the long trip.
I know I am. Hungry as a bear. Come on, honey. It can't be all that important.
No, of course not. Just a silly whim, but funny how it draws me. As though someone was begging me to meet them there.
And so there is. Me, but by moonlight. It's a perfect place for young lovers, wouldn't you say, Mr. Hughes?
I reckon that depends on the point of view. Well, shall we travel on in and say howdy to Ellen Bunter?
By all means.
Don't forget to come back.
Susanna, are you coming?
Yes. Yes, Hank. Just stay close to me. Don't leave me alone.
My, what pretty clothes you have, Mrs. Fleming. Boston must be quite a city.
Why, yes, Mrs. Bunter. It is. It's a beautiful town.
I'm surprised you ever come away from there out here to the west. If I was you, I'd pick up my skirts and get right back there.
Why? Whatever you, do you mean?
Well, there's things best not talked about. I'm just saying what I think has to be said.
You sound as if you don't want us here.
There's a black shadow lays over this house, Mrs. Fleming. And I don't want nobody else should lose their light under it. Special ways, no two nice young'uns like you. But please, don't say nothing to Mr. Buford about what I said. Wouldn't want to lose my job.
Well, we can hardly just leave it at that. I'd like to know what you mean.
I promise to tell you as soon as I can. But right now, got to go get supper on the table.
I can't get over that cellar. Why, it's almost set up for a clinic already. But Mr. Huntington wasn't a doctor.
No, son. He sure wasn't that.
Well, what did he do?
Well, he mostly made money. Yes, sir. He looked to be about the richest man in this part of the country once. He used to raise cattle. Then he found a gold mine right here on his own property. Over the other side of the ridge over there.
Is it still active?
No. Vein ran out 20 years ago. But not before he piled up a bundle. I should know. I was his banker. Yes, sir. Carson Huntington retired before he was 40.
What did he do with himself then?
Well, mainly he devoted himself to being a father. But he liked hunting real good. And you've only got to take a look around the walls to see where that led him to.
You mean all the stuffed heads?
Mm.
Moose, buffalo, deer that are all over the place? He liked to collect them?
More than that. He stuffed them all himself. Built himself all those tile rooms downstairs and worked just like a doctor in a white coat and all.
Ah, a taxidermist, eh?
More than that. You know how one thing leads to another and... Well, here comes your lady. I must leave you to your supper.
I was just going to ask you if you would join us. Mrs. Bunter tells me there's enough for you. And Mr. Whitfield, too.
If you cook like that every night, Mrs. Bunter, I may just abandon my wife.
Oh, thank you, sir. But I'm sure she's a mighty fine cook herself.
Oh, matter of fact, you wouldn't think of it to look at her, but she is. And a housekeeper.
Sure is good to see love lighting up this gloomy old place again. Just like the good old days, Buford, huh?
Yes, Ezra, but let's not go digging into the past. These two young folk represent the future. They're not interested in what's been.
Oh, but we are. At least I am.
Oh, so am I.
I'll just take the tray out to the kitchen. I'll bring the coffee in soon.
Poor Ellen. No wonder she doesn't want to listen to...
Ezra... You talk too much.
What'd I say?
Nothing much so far. But usually too much. I reckon I have to tell you a little about the house. But it's better for you to get it from me than from some old windbag like Ezra. Oh,
tarnation, Buford. That's no way to talk.
I tell you what it is, Mrs. Fleming. A house stays empty like this one did for over 15 years. And people start to build legends, even a dried-up old lawyer like Ezra here. Now, I'm a banker, businessman. I give you the plain facts.
We'd appreciate that, sir.
I'd like to hear the legends.
Well, let's start with the facts. It's about 60 years back that Carson married Sarah.
62, almost to the day.
Well, you're old enough to remember exactly. It was before my time.
I'd just opened my office, and Carson Huntington was one of my first clients. His folks had left him quite a spread, and he sold off enough cattle to build this big mansion for Sarah. Oh, she was a beauty, all right, and well fixed herself. That was some wedding.
No, we don't have to go into every detail.
Yeah, I only mention it because they were so happy, those two. Just like these young'uns. And how could they have known the tragedy that was to be the most part of their lives?
Tragedy?
I suppose 20 years longing for a child and never being able to produce one isn't tragedy enough. I suppose when Rachel did come to him, her being born premature and blind and mute wasn't tragedy. I suppose Rachel's death...
That's enough, Ezra.
No, please. We'd like to know.
No, what Ezra says was true. Sarah did have a baby, too late in life. A little wisp of a girl who was blind and mute. They doted on her, devoted 16 years of their lives to bringing her up. Pampered and coddled her like she was made of china. They were recluses here, and saw few people. When Rachel was 16, she fell in love.
With Ellen Bunter's son, Elisha. Lost at Chickamauga in the war between the states, rest his soul.
Lord rot it, you mean? He was in his 20s, and he just took advantage of the poor little thing. And naturally, it was an unsuitable match from any point of view. So the boy was fired by Carson and ran off to join the army. Rachel took it real hard, thinking he'd run off on her because of her deficiencies. And went into a decline and died from a kind of colic.
Broken heart, more likely.
If any hearts were broken, it was Sarah and Carlson's. And after the burial, they hold themselves away here at Huntington House. And no one saw hide nor hair of them for a year. And then one day, suddenly, unexpectedly, they both died.
Like a bolt from the blue.
He means that quite literally. They were on their way to church on the anniversary of Rachel's death and pulled under a tree to escape a sudden thunderstorm. The tree was struck by lightning, and both of them were killed.
How awful.
Yes. There were no relatives.
And the will specified that the house was to be kept and maintained in perpetuum.
Yes. Now, I think Ezra and I should mosey along and let you settle in.
Good night, Mr. Hughes.
Mr. Whitfield, and drive carefully. Ooh, come on. Bedtime.
Oh, look at the moon. Isn't it lovely?
Not when I'm so tired. I can't even open my eyes to see it.
You're not that tired. Maybe you had too much wine. Let's walk down to that little summer house.
Oh, come on. Have a heart, honey.
Susanna.
What do you expect to find there?
I don't know.
Well, you're not going to find out tonight. Come on. I'm taking you up to bed.
Yes, darling. Oh, take me to bed and warm me and hold me. And never, never let me go.
Susanna finally fell asleep, shutting her ears against that still, small voice in her head. Tomorrow, she will talk to Hank about it, and about Huntington House. Outdoors, the moon is at its zenith. Does something move strangely in the shadows? And if you strain your ears, can you hear the sound of a music box? I'll return shortly with Act Two.
Magazine, sir?
Yes. Time magazine, please, stewardess.
Oh, golly, that man across the aisle just took the last copy of Time we have.
Oh.
Sorry. Magazine?
Pardon me?
Yes?
I noticed you haven't started reading your Time magazine yet.
No, you couldn't.
But you haven't...
I'm writing a letter to my mother, and when I'm finished, I'm going to enjoy time. Don't try to peek inside of it, sir.
Stewardess.
Yes, sir.
This man isn't reading the Time magazine you gave.
I'm writing a letter first.
To his mommy.
Don't be nasty.
All I want...
Sir, couldn't this gentleman
just
here...
Just let me glance at the theater section.
No.
Modern Living?
No.
One little book review.
Look, I know how enjoyable Time magazine is to read. What? He'll start reading one article and another, and by the time he's finished, we'll be in Budapest.
I have a speed reading diploma.
The
problem here, stewardess.
Not really, Captain. This man here has the last copy of Time magazine, but he's writing a letter to his mommy.
Sir, you'll have to give up one or the other.
Yes. All right. Here.
Dear mommy, I'm up in a big airplane.
Time makes everything more interesting, including you.
Hello there. This is Tony Marvin for the National Leukemia Association. Please remember this name, Project Research. Now, in addition to our other services, our special effort named Project Research has been established to help deliver that knockout punch against leukemia. Won't you join me and throw your knockout punch? You'll be getting on a winning team. Send your tax-deductible donation today to Project Research, care of the National Leukemia Association, Box 3039, Garden City, New York. That's National Leukemia Association, Box 3039, Garden City, New York. Once again, this is Tony Marvin saying thanks to you for Project Research. We are committed to conquering leukemia.
It's just before dawn, with the moon sloping down the sky, the last of the full moon. In the strange new bed in Huntington House, Dr. Henry Fleming lies sleeping gently. Beside him, Susanna stirs with little whimpers as that importunate voice penetrates her sleep.
What'd you say, honey?
Oh, nothing, Hank. It's just a dream. It's just... Oh, I don't like it here.
What do you mean, sweetie?
There's something wrong. It isn't a happy house, the way you and I want.
Well, you mean you want to leave?
You know we can't do that. You've tied up your whole future here.
I've tied up my whole future with you. That comes first. But why? What is it don't you like here? All the sad history which is buried in the past, as Mr. Hughes said?
It isn't buried in the past. No matter what he says.
What does that mean?
Since the first moment I got here last night, there's a voice.
Voice?
A young girl's voice. That calls to me, speaks to me.
Just to you alone?
I guess, if you haven't heard it.
Well, so that's why you've been so funny a couple of times. Well, what does this voice say?
Nothing, really. Just calling me to help and to come to her.
Susie.
Oh, I always mistrust your motives when you call me that.
Well, don't this time. I just wanted to say we were both dead tired after a 10-day journey across the country. Nothing about last night was wholly real. Our life in the West starts as of this morning. Now, let's give it a day or two so we can really judge it. Then if it's wrong or your voices still speak to you, I promise we'll face up to it.
You don't believe me. And perhaps you're right. This morning it was so faint, I could scarcely hear it. All right, Hank, darling. Let's forget about me. And concentrate on your life. Oh, Ellen. I mean, Mrs. Bunter. An apron full of fresh eggs.
Every morning, ma'am, if you want them. We have a power of layers.
Can I help fix breakfast?
Oh, a lady like you has no place in the kitchen.
I want to be here. And do I have to call you Mrs. Bunter?
Couldn't it be just Ellen and Susanna or Susan or whatever you want to call me?
You're a sweet child. And it's good to see a bright, fresh face here. But is it wise for us to be that close?
Well, I don't care if it's wise. I need a friend. And someone to answer some of my questions.
All right, little one. You have a friend.
I'm so glad. Yesterday, I thought you would have done anything to get me out of here.
I should be ashamed, I suppose. This house has been my life, but for all the tragedy, it has treated me well enough.
Then why do you resent my coming here?
It isn't you, dear heart. It's only that I thought the past was buried. Why don't you accept your good fortune as it is and leave the ghost of yesterday buried and forgotten?
I will, if they leave me alone.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
That's two of us. Yesterday, when there was time, you said you would explain about the black shadows that lie over this house.
It isn't the time yet. Certain people would be judged wrong.
Rachel Huntington, for example?
What do you know of her?
Only that she died mysteriously. And that she loved your son.
My son. My son that was. A fine, true boy then, until he was cast out.
What happened?
I neither excuse him or blame him. They might have found a life together. Instead, my Elisha was thrown out, sent to be cannon fodder, because two children of love had committed the oldest sin in the world, a sin that wedlock would have wiped out.
I didn't realize that. You mean that Rachel...
I didn't know it myself till after Elisha'd been sent away, for sure. Till after her death when I talked to Mrs. Huntington.
Will you tell me what you were hinting at last night?
I think you ought to go from here, now, while the going's good.
It's funny. I get a feeling you're thinking less of me than you are of yourself. Maybe you're the one who should leave.
Oh no, please. Please don't send me away. I promise. If you promise to let me stay, I won't open my mouth again.
It's just so strange about Mrs. Bunter, Hank. I mean, you know I'm sensitive to people.
Don't I just, my little witch, or medium, or whatever you are?
No. Don't talk about me like that.
Darling, I didn't mean anything. It's just that you are psychic. Clairvoyant, you have some kind of perception that's extra, more than other people's.
You do believe that, don't you? Even if you're a doctor.
Too many things have happened in our lives for me not to. Remember how you woke me crying to tell me that my father was in danger?
Yes.
And we found out afterward it was exactly the moment he'd had his heart attack.
I don't always see bad things.
Of course not. You also told me the moment our child started to grow inside you, long before any doctor could have known. Darling, I believe in your intuitions. What about the voice you thought you heard when we first came here?
Oh, there hasn't been a hint of that for a month. I don't know what it was. What's that you have in your hand?
Oh, it's funny. I was poking around on the second floor, in that sort of special little wing.
The one you were thinking about for the laboratory and all the new microscopic equipment for research.
Yeah. Well, that's where I found this box. Just lying in the middle of the floor.
What is it?
It's a music box.
Oh.
An old one that doesn't work.
Are you sure?
Well, it's probably just rusted. Needs some oil.
Could you fix it?
Maybe. I'm not sure I want to.
I want you to.
That's a strange tone from you.
Oh, I didn't mean... Please, Hank. I'd like you to try to make it work.
If you'll tell me why it's so important...
The voice I thought I heard when we first came here. When it spoke to me far away in the background, a music box was playing.
I see.
Is that why you hesitate?
Partly. Something tells me I should take this lovely old walnut box and bury it in the ground or the deepest lake I can find.
Why?
Well, the room where I found it had only one window, dark and shaded by the vines which clamber all over the house. The wing must have been closed off for years. The dust was an inch thick. It was eerie that everywhere I went, I left my footprints outlined clearly behind me.
Wait till Mrs. Bunter and I get in there with some mops and a broom. We'll chase the dirt out and wipe out your footprints.
Well, I'm sure you will. There's only one thing you can't wipe out.
What's that?
The spot where the box was lying, covered with cobwebs.
Well, why can't we clean that up, too?
Because when I picked it up, there was no depression for all its weight. No mark to show it had lain there for any time at all. Except for the fact that it lay in the center of the room. With no footprints in the dust coming or going, it could have been placed there yesterday or this morning before I entered the room. Do you still want me to see if I can make it play its song again?
Hank?
Who else?
Oh, it could have been Mrs. Bunter. Look at that full red moon. Isn't it gorgeous?
Yes. I have a little present for you.
Oh, what?
Your music box. It plays now.
Let me hear.
Very well. Do you remember something?
What?
Today is your birthday. That's why I worked so hard to have this ready for you. I know it isn't much of a present, but this year, with all the other expenses and... What is it?
That melody.
You know it?
That's the song that was playing behind the ghost voice that...
What is it, darling?
Look.
Where?
At the summer house. Don't you see her?
There's nobody there.
Yes, there is. See how she floats and spins with her crinoline swirling around her. She's calling to me. I can hear her. I've got to go to her. Come with me, Hank. Come with me.
Don't worry, Susanna. I won't let you out of my sight. You see? There's no one here.
But there was. There still is. Only... What happened to the music box?
It ran down.
Wind it up.
No. I should never have fixed it so that it would play.
It doesn't matter. She would have reached me anyway. Wait.
Find me. Come to me, Susanna. It's Rachel.
How?
The music box. The music box.
Was she just talking to you? The ghost?
Yes. It was Rachel.
But she's been... How could she talk to you? She was a muse.
I don't know. I don't think she wants to hurt me. She wants me to help.
Help her to do what? How?
I don't know. I'm not even sure it's a ghost that's trying to reach me. That's what scares me more than anything.
Susie, you can't be serious. What are you trying to say?
There's something terribly wrong about it all, darling. And somehow Mrs. Bunter is mixed up in it. I know she is.
In what way?
You know I like to keep charge of household accounts and things. The supplies, the towels and linens, everything that goes with a house. Too many things are missing. In too obvious a pattern. Hank, there's someone living in this house we don't know about.
And you think...
What can I think?
You mean that Rachel never died? That somehow she's still alive?
I think she's not in her grave. And that she is calling me for help to get her out of some captivity that has chained her for 15 years. Somehow, I've got to find a way to help her.
Now, there's an interesting corner to turn in a story. To find that a ghost, a well-established ghost, may not be one after all. Something we all must find out when I return with Act 3.
You've worked hard to get where you are, and now would be a very good time to give yourself a little pat on the back in the form of Buick Electra, a car filled with room, luxury, comfort, the perfect place for you and your free spirit to get together. Buick Electra. Think of it as recognition for a job well done.
than hearts. Your heart association has devotion to saving hearts, but only you can make it happen, only you. So give to your heart fund. When you give to your heart fund, well, now that will be a kind of love song too.
Sound familiar? Each year, fire claims a devastating toll in human life and property. Last year, fire killed over 11,000 people and destroyed close to $4 billion in property. Underwriters Laboratories field engineer Ray McNabb says you can help prevent this terrible killer from striking you or the ones you love by following these simple precautions.
Check the condition of electrical cords, appliances, and receptacles. Make certain that electrical cords are not frayed or placed beneath carpeting. Always keep matches and lighters away from children. And store paints and other flammable liquids in sealed containers.
And know exactly where your fire extinguisher is located.
That's right. Keep a fire extinguisher in the kitchen, the garage, and where your heaters are located. And be sure it is accessible should the fire start in that area.
This is public safety information from Underwriters Laboratories and this station.
The full moon passes for a moment behind clouds, allowing Hank a worried frown which he can conceal from his wife. His mind is a spinning mixture of thoughts he is fighting to keep from coagulating. They must be kept separate to evaluate them. Is Susanna simply suffering from the vagaries of a lady in her, as would have been said in those times, interesting condition? Or is there really an extra presence hidden in Huntington House?
If Rachel, if that's who it is, won't reveal herself to us openly, how can we find a way to help her?
You don't think I'm crazy, do you, Hank? There is some mystery that's got to be cleared away before we can ever live in this house.
But you really believe it's possible that someone or something is hiding here?
Someone. From the amount it uses up in food and linen and towels. But at the same time, something that isn't natural. It's supernatural.
What is it?
Oh, it's just the moon coming out from behind the clouds again. As bright as some enormous chandelier hung in the sky. If only I... Wait. She said the music box. Start it again, dear. Quick, before the moon goes behind the clouds.
You sure you want to?
Yes, yes, quickly.
Okay. Well?
Look. There she is. Dancing.
Where?
Up, all up the path, towards the front door. And she's... She's beckoning for us to come. She... Oh.
What is it?
Oh, the moon behind the clouds again. I can't see. Well, let's go. There's no one here.
The front door's opening.
What happened to the music box?
It stopped. I don't know why.
Oh, there you are, Dr. Fleming.
What is it, Ellen? What's wrong?
I think he's dying. Please, could you come to him and try to save his life? Even if he isn't worth it.
Save whose life?
My son. I'll show you where he is. He's hiding out in the barn.
Hold the lantern higher, Mrs. Bunter. That's it. Hurt there?
Some.
How about here?
Oh, that hurts pretty good.
He's burning up with fever. We've got to get him up to the house, see if we can't bring it down.
Oh, no, sir. You bring me up to the house and you're just signing my death warrant.
What's he talking about?
There's a wanted poster out for him. Murder and highway robbery. He killed a United States Marshal making his getaway up Cheyenne Way.
If I can't get him where I can treat him properly, it won't be the government signs your son's death warrant.
This is your son, Ellen?
More's the shame. Yes.
But I thought he was dead in the Civil War.
I'd take more pride in him if he had been. But he deserted the army to take up with a bunch of cutthroats and outlaws robbing and stealing and killing. Did he got wounded. He came crawling home to me to beg me to save his life. What could I do? He was my only child. I didn't know how to turn my back on him.
I should never put you on the spot, Ma. I don't deserve nothing better than I got. A bullet in the gut. I should have let it take me in its own good time.
Just what it's doing.
Oh, no. I was wide open and bleeding like a stuck pig when I crawled in here over a month ago. Ma nursed me back to health and the wound closed up. And then this damn fever got to me.
The fever is because you still have that bullet locked up inside you. It's festering. You have peritonitis. And the poison will kill you unless I get that bullet out.
You a real doctor?
I have a sheepskin, says I am.
And that means by law, you're going to have to let them know I'm still alive, and I'm going to have to hang just the same.
We can talk about that later.
Oh, no, sir. Johnny Law don't get me. Now, everybody stay right where they are, nice and easy, while I get out of here.
Elisha!
Ain't no use trying to reach for me. You lost me a long time ago, just like I lost myself. The only thing outside of you I'm really sorry for is I never should have hurt Rachel. The funny thing is, I really loved her. If only we'd ever had a chance. Oh, Mom, I wish I could have done better by you and Rachel.
Elisha!
Hush, Mrs. Bunter. Let my husband handle it.
I'm sorry. It was too late. This time he's really dead. There's nothing much I can do, Mrs. Bunter. I'll have to ride in and tell the authorities.
There was no real excuse for all the things he'd done the past few years. If he'd ever had the chance, he might have amounted to something. You should have seen him with Rachel.
Oh, don't torture yourself with memories.
Well, I can with the good ones. In spite of the misfortunes birth brought her, she was so bright and full of the joy of life. You should have seen her dance.
Dance? She was blind, wasn't she?
Oh, that seemed to make no difference.
She could hear, sharp as a bat.
I always said what a pity it was they never got her a pianoforte for her to learn to play by herself.
But they never did. Just music boxes?
Oh, yes.
Like this?
Oh, yes. That looks like one of them. That box does seem familiar.
Ellen, are you sure Rachel Huntingdon is dead?
Well, I'm sure she is. I know it. To keep her from running after my Elisha.
They poisoned her.
What? Did you actually see her dead?
They'd sent me away. And then she died so sudden. And I came to the funeral and I stood in the back so it wouldn't be seen. And I saw the coffin lowered into the ground and the dirt covering it. And the minister commending her to heaven. Is that what you mean, Miss Susan?
I don't know what I mean. And this isn't any time to talk about it. First of all, let's go get the minister and see your son decently buried.
You sure you don't want to come with me?
No, darling. I really think I ought to stay with poor Ellen.
You're not afraid of anything?
Why should I be?
Well, you were the one who sensed another presence in the house.
But that's all over. Now we know it was Ellen's son.
Only that's not what you were hearing. You were hearing a woman's voice calling to you.
To help the man she loved. Who just died. And who must be with her now. There's nothing to be afraid of anymore.
I don't know. I'm not sure I should leave you alone.
Oh, don't be silly. You'll be back in an hour or so. And even if poor little Rachel wanted to haunt me, she couldn't mean me any harm.
Well, it's a dark night. And even if she wanted to, she only seems to come when the moon is bright. Promise me you'll go straight to bed, lock the door, and wait for me.
I will. Hurry, darling.
Like the wind. You go straight upstairs. Bye, Susanna.
Bye, Hank.
Aren't you going up to bed, Ellen?
Yes, I suppose so. I don't know what for. I won't sleep.
You must. Come on. We'll have a hot toddy in the kitchen and then go up together.
The Huntingtons should have left her alone. She'd been better off with him the way things happened. Lord knows, he'd have been better off with her.
They loved her and wanted to protect her.
Would have been the same if she'd been normal. They waited too long to have a child. When at last she came to them, they smothered her. The only freedom she ever had was her dancing and her music boxes.
Like this one.
Where'd you find that?
I didn't. Hank did. In the little room on the top floor of the wing?
Rachel's old room. But that part of the house has been shut up ever since I came back. That was part of what it said in the will. Why did you turn that on?
I didn't. It just started by itself.
I know that tune.
I thought you said you couldn't tell one tune from another.
I can that one. It was her favorite. Turn it off. That's better. I don't want to be reminded of my poor little Rachel tonight. What is it, Miss Susan?
Shh. She's calling me again.
Come, Susan. Come. Now you must. I want to lie with my lover at last.
Where are you going?
Where the music box is leading me. This time I cannot fail her.
Don't go in there. That's Miss Rachel's old room.
This is where she bids me come. Hold your candle higher. It's empty now. Nothing left but dust.
But it's less than half the room. There's a wall built there.
Where?
In front of us. There are two great windows beyond that. They look down on the garden, but this wall, I don't know where it came from or when it was built.
Or why. There's no door in it. It's papered all the way across.
My candle blew out.
Oh, my lantern's still lit. And look, there, where the wind tore the paper off the wall, there's a door.
Don't go in there, Miss Susan.
I have to. This is what she's been calling me to do.
Oh, my God. What is it?
Look. On the bed.
It's Miss Rachel's room. Just as it was. And that's her. Just as she was. Oh, the good Lord protect us. How could she still be alive after 15 years?
I knew you'd come. I knew. Take me to the grave so I can sleep at last.
Oh, my darling, I can't believe it. When Mr. Hughes and I came home in that wind and couldn't find you, I thought I'd lose my mind. I imagined all kinds of things, but nothing like this. Is she alive?
No. She's dead. And she has been all these years.
But it's not possible. 15 years. You can't preserve a corpse. How?
Excuse me, Dr. Fleming.
What, Mr. Hughes?
Believe me, I had no idea. I knew how Carson and Sarah worshipped the child, but I never dreamed of a love as sick as this. This was their way of keeping her for the rest of their lives, preserved, so that they could never lose her.
But how?
I'm a banker. I can't tell you. But a room hermetically sealed and all Carson's skills. I told you he was a taxidermist. But I never did get a chance to tell you. He ended up his life here in this city as our undertaker.
A
A grisly ending to a weird story, and yet a happy one. Rachel Huntington was finally laid to her rest alongside the man who might have been her husband. Huntington House was cleared of all shadows and became the nucleus of one of the country's finest hospitals, renowned for the miracles it achieves in saving life rather than preserving the illusion of it. I'll be back shortly.
Who will cope with tomorrow for a brighter new day? There's one hope for tomorrow, the children of today.
There is only one hope for tomorrow, the children. Yet there are children in this world right now who have no hope for a brighter today. They're hungry, illiterate, living in misery, and when they grow up, if they grow up, they'll pass on this hopelessness. And it's the world's loss and the world's shame. You can help children to grow up with healthy bodies and educated minds, with a zest for life that they'll pass on to their children and to our world. Won't you please send a check to Save the Children Federation, Box 970, Grand Central Station, New York, 10017. That's Save the Children, Box 970, Grand Central Station, New York, 10017. Think about tomorrow.
We've got to save the children and save the world. Help them to grow.
Such an alluring, gentle, lovely sound. The tinkle of a music box. And yet, hearing one, I tend to shudder. Picturing that long dead girl, her eyes open in an unwinking stare, and the voice that never could speak in life, crying out in desperation for peace, never to be heard till at last came Susanna with her gift of perception. Our cast included Don Scardino, Jada Roland, Stats Cotsworth, Ann Petoniak, and Robert Maxwell. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
You haven't told me why you think you were in the garage tampering with the brakes. Why would you want to kill yourself, Olivia?
I didn't want to kill myself.
Then why did you deliberately ruin the brakes? That should have been a sure way to end your life. I know that hill leading down from the house.
Doctor, it was only by chance, a fluke, that I was driving the car. If I fixed those brakes because I wanted to kill someone, then that someone is John. I hardly ever drive the car.
John, I can't believe that you would want to kill John.
Why would I go to all that trouble to kill myself? Surely I could think of easier ways to die.
Olivia, do you really want to kill John?
Yes.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Time Magazine. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Thank you.
bright and beautiful music. This is KIXI, Seattle.
CBS News. The man whose name is part of a landmark Supreme Court decision was murdered tonight in a Phoenix bar. This is Ann Crosman reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Ernesto Miranda's appeal to the Supreme Court resulted in the famous 1966 Miranda decision, under which defendants must be informed of their rights by arresting police officers. On Saturday night, Miranda got into a fight in a bar. Police Lieutenant Richard Draper describes what happened.
Ernesto A. Miranda was in the La Amapola bar at 2nd Street and Jackson in downtown Phoenix. An argument took place with two other subjects in the bar. He was stabbed once in the left chest and once in the left abdomen, and he was dead on arrival at the Good Samaritan Hospital in Phoenix. Witnesses have been interviewed. Detectives are presently still continuing the investigation.
Police are questioning one of the two men involved in the bar fight. The other man, who police believe killed Miranda, is still at large. More news coming up.
I'm George Herman, CBS News, moderator of Face the Nation, heard each Sunday on most of these CBS radio network stations. President Ford's proposed budget calls for increased expenditures for defense. Tomorrow, our in-person guest on Face the Nation will be Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. Our panel of Washington newsmen will question him in a spontaneous interview about his plans for the department. So join us for Face the Nation with Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld tomorrow on most of these CBS radio network stations.
Disease and pollution take no holidays. Hello, this is Les Tremaine, reminding you that Christmas seals work for all of us all year round. They fight such lung diseases as emphysema, asthma, and tuberculosis, as well as the growing pollution of the air we breathe. If you've overlooked it during the holiday season, it's not too late to answer your Christmas seal letter right now.
Your Lung Association says it's a matter of life and breath.
President Ford is back in Washington after a day trip to two states. In Dearborn, Michigan, he spoke to Midwestern GOP leaders, and in Williamsburg, Virginia, he took part in bicentennial events, including an address to the State General Assembly. This trip was supposed to be non-political, but some of Mr. Ford's election year themes, like opposition to big government, were in his speeches. Five Democratic presidential hopefuls appeared together at a party conference in Acton, Massachusetts on Saturday. Indiana Senator Birch Bayh, former Senator Fred Harris of Oklahoma, Washington Senator Henry Jackson, Pennsylvania Governor Milton Schaap, and Congressman Morris Udall of Arizona. All five criticized Mr. Ford's performance, Udall saying, "You don't know how bad he is." We have a report on Jackson's appearance from Leslie Stahl.
Jackson was the only one of the candidates who spoke at the Minuteman Conference to hire a fife and drum corps to escort him into the hall. After a short speech, he was asked for his stand on abortion.
I believe that life begins with conception. I therefore oppose the result of the Supreme Court's decision. And in all conscience, I oppose the Supreme Court decision. But having said that, I don't believe there's a solution to it by a constitutional amendment. It simply is not going to happen, and it's not the right solution at this time.
Jackson was asked if he thinks abortion is tantamount to murder, but he avoided the question by repeating what he had said before. Leslie Stahl, CBS News, Acton, Massachusetts.
Talks were continuing late Saturday night to try to avert a strike threatened for Monday by the International Ladies Garment Workers Union. A union spokesman says the workers and the dress manufacturers are bargaining furiously because neither wants a strike. The workers are asking for a wage increase above the $4 an hour they now average. Now, this message.
You're listening to the beginning of something. An automobile commercial? No. As a matter of fact, it's the beginning of a new phase in a man's life. A man who looks different, moves differently, speaks differently, because he was born with cerebral palsy. The new phase in his life began when he started the engine of that car and drove off with his brand new operator's license in his pocket. His name is Joe Elko, man with cerebral palsy, college student, and now automobile driver. It upsets some people to see Joe get into that car. In fact, it upsets some people to see him at all. That's because they don't understand that although Joe may look different, inside he's no different than anyone else. He and United Cerebral Palsy are looking forward to the day when everyone will understand. In the meantime, Joe joins us in hoping you'll give generously to United Cerebral Palsy. They had a hand in helping him become what he is today, a man with a future.
Police in Ohio say at least two people were killed and seven others badly burned Saturday night in a fire and explosions at a sporting goods store in the Lake Erie community of North Kingsville. The fire chief says the explosions came from ammunition in the store. Federal investigators have been called in to check the cause of the explosions. French police are not saying if they have any leads in last night's robbery of 127 paintings and drawings by Picasso. The artworks were taken from the Palace of the Pope's Museum in Avignon. The robbery came 3 days after the theft of more than 100 Picasso lithographs from a Paris art gallery. I'm Ann Crosman, CBS News.
Information and good music, part of every day on KIXI, continues.